welcome back to another episode of the Menswear Style Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Brooker. Today on the show, we have Billy Thompson. He is the president and co-founder of Thompson Tea. The Thompson Tea with Hydro Shield sweat-proof technology is a patented undershirt guaranteed to block underarm sweat, as seen on Shark Tank and The Doctors, and it's been an editor's pick in Shape magazine. Proudly serving over 250,000 customers in over 135 countries worldwide and handcrafted in the USA. And you can find more details over at thompsontea.com. That's thompsontea.com. And you'll find all the show notes over at menswearstyle.co.uk. But let me bring Billy in here. He'll introduce himself and tell us more about the brand Thompson Tea.
Yeah, sure. Pete, thanks for having me, by the way. Really appreciate that. And my name is Billy Thompson. I am the co-founder and co-inventor of the Thompson Tea, which is an undershirt that blocks underarm sweat. And I'm actually wearing one of them right now, so you can kind of see what it looks like there underneath my jacket here. And that's basically it. It's you know, it's designed for people who either suffer from a condition called axillary hyperhidrosis, which is excessive underarm sweat beyond any physiological need. And then it's also for those people who sweat on a situational basis, whether it be a, you know, a meeting, a job interview, or, you know, they have a nice shirt that they want to protect, those nice dress shirts. Some of them are custom made, can be very expensive, and they want to prevent those, you know, pit stains or antiperspirant stains. And we have customers buying our shirts for that reason as well. And we make them for both men and women.
Hey, that's a good point, actually, because how do I say this without sounding highfalutin? I have my own dress shirts that I get made. I have my own shirt maker. This one, yep, I'm wearing is modeled on the one Roger Moore wore in For Your Eyes Only.
Very nice.
And I'm very, very, it's one of the only things that I'm very precious about. And so having t-shirts underneath shirts, dress shirts, or, you know, smart shirts is something that's of interest to me. And I might be jumping ahead here, but do you think that there's a culture more for, say, the American market to wear t-shirts underneath shirts than there is for, say, the UK people? Have you come across that?
You know what? I mean, I unfortunately can't speak to that particular, you know, culture in the UK. I do know it's very prevalent here in the United States. A lot of guys will be wearing, you know, and definitely more so guys than girls. They'll be wearing undershirts underneath a lot of their other stuff, whether it be for, you know, a little bit of the collar to show or for the collar not to show, for those varied reasons. I guess, Pete, I could ask you, are the guys out there wearing undershirts? Are you wearing an undershirt right now?
Well, I'm actually not wearing an undershirt now because I've got them all in the wash, believe it or not. But I generally do wear an undershirt if I'm wearing a nice shirt. If I'm just wearing my kind of, I guess, disposable shirts, for a better phrase, then I'm not too precious about it. But I mean, my girlfriend, for example, brought this up, and she's been saying this for years because she's spent a lot of time in America. She says Americans would wear an undershirt, much like you'd wear pants underneath trousers, boxer shorts, briefs underneath trousers. In the UK, it's not something that is so prevalent, which is bananas because we have the colder weather. So you'd think it would be over here.
Yeah, exactly. And that's interesting. I appreciate that insight. I do know the UK is one of our larger international territories. You know, we've seen a lot of success there. We've seen a lot of success out of Germany. So it's definitely a market that we can appreciate.
Sure. Well, perhaps you can tell me, I mean, the brand is around 10 years old. Is that right?
Yeah, it is. We celebrated our 10-year anniversary this year. Having, you know, obviously, having made it through COVID like a lot of other people, right? And shared a lot of similar struggles with that, right? I mean, it was quite the experience. But, you know, it's been, you know, you come out of something like that and you almost feel like, well, if we can make it through that, then, you know, how much more stronger are we now as a company and as individuals that, you know, we could look to, you know, the much, much more brighter days ahead of us.
Yeah. And how did you get the brand off the ground in terms of capital? Was this something that you personally invested in, or did you seed fund it?
You know what? It was definitely a very bootstrapped endeavor. And I had started on this project several months before I brought in my business partner and co-founder. His name is Randy Choi. And essentially what we did was we put in $10,000 a piece. So it really was only, you know, $20,000, and we managed to take that $20,000, and, you know, obviously we weren't taking any pay. We rolled that back into the company over and over again. And for the first 2 years, I mean, there was no pay being, you know, distributed from the company. And we, again, a true and tried bootstrap strategy. But for me personally, that $10,000 was a mix of cash. And, you know, I relied very heavily on credit cards, and more so for my personal expenses. You know, I had just had a baby at the time. And so it was a very stressful time. And so I had to utilize my credit cards to give my, you know, to cover my personal expenses to the largest degree that I could possible. And I racked up, you know, over $100,000 in credit card debt. I think one of the credit card companies did a story not too long ago where they profiled that, you know, that $100,000 in debt that I racked up and was luckily, you know, able to pay back in due time. But that is really how we started. And, you know, we did initially look for some startup capital, of course, right? We wanted to, you know, hyper growth. And, you know, at the time, a lot of the capital came with a contingency that we would move our production offshore, which is very typical for clothing. And we were manufacturing here in the United States. My business partner has a domestic supply chain network that he's been utilizing for, oh my goodness, now we're probably approaching 30 years now. It was 20 years back when we started. So it's 30 years now. And we felt adamant about not wanting to move our production overseas. So in those very early days, we declined those offers. And we actually had a small crowdfunding campaign that we launched on Indiegogo as well. But that's basically it from a startup capital perspective. And Pete, I'm not sure, and this is jumping ahead many years, but I'm not sure if you knew this or not, but we were on the show Shark Tank.
Right. Okay. No, I didn't know that. So that's the Dragon's Den equivalent over here.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
Okay. How did that go? Oh, wow. I'm intrigued. Yeah. How did that go? Yeah.
And we were on season 8, episode 23, and we had a pretty large ask. We were asking for $700,000 for 10%. I'm sorry, 7% of our company. We ended up agreeing to $700,000 for 25% of our company with Robert. And ultimately, that deal did not come to fruition, I think. And it was primarily more so on my business partner and I's decision to do that. Unfortunately, I can't get into too much of the details as to why, but it was a decision that we had made collectively. But it was, you know, it was a great experience from start to finish, and obviously a major, major win for our business. We just had a Shark Tank reunion here in Vegas, luckily, the convention mecca of the United States. And got to see people from all the way from season 1 all the way up. And so it was really cool. There's kind of a fraternal feeling to, you know, having been on the show. We all went through the same thing.
Hey, so question about Shark Tank. I don't know if people watch Shark Tank and Dragon's Den and really get the idea that when you're doing the pitch and then there's an agreement made with one of the dragons, or I guess one of the sharks, that's like, say, 50% of it, right? That's the handshake for the cameras. And then you got to go away and have a look at the fine print, draw up the contracts. And I guess that is where everything can kind of fall down for both parties, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it is what you see on TV. The sharks, they have no idea who's coming up. And it is the first time we're meeting them, and you pitch them and you do a handshake deal. And like you said, and then shortly thereafter, the due diligence process starts, and you start going down the path of, okay, well, this is, you know, and a lot of people, it's funny, a lot of people think, oh my gosh, you know, you walk backstage and Robert cut you a check for $700,000. It's like, no, it didn't quite work that way, but.
that would be brilliant.
And there's a big, the statistics are out there, so I'm not disclosing anything that other people haven't cited already. But, you know, I think if it's upwards of, you know, 70-80% of the deals that you see on TV actually don't, you know, get inked or get finalized, you know, behind the scenes.
Right. Okay. Well, that's fascinating. But yeah, I think people just assume that's it. They're writing out checks and they're just going,
yeah.
They have on the table is like real.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, there's a silver briefcase with $700,000 in cash that we just, you know, we walk out of the studio with.
You're like, thanks. And now, well, we're off to Vegas now because we can just pump all that down in Fantasy Island. Well, thank you. Getting back to the TESO, I want to talk about some of the patented technology, such as the Hydro Shield, that it's all on the website. And the website, by the way, is fantastic. It's really, really easy to navigate around.
Oh, thank you.
And it's kind of really well structured. And I say this every now and again to some guests that come on the show, but the ones that have really got a good website, they get it. You know, it goes where your head wants to go, if you know what I mean. When you click on something and you're not sent down a rabbit hole or a wormhole that you can't get back from. But the blogs and all of the like the Sweat 101 tabs and all the frequently asked questions, it's so comprehensive. Basically, if you want to know anything regarding the science of perspiring and, you know, and what's involved with the teas here, then this is the place to go. But my question, my long question, my very verbose question,
that's okay. That's okay. And Pete, if I could interject really quickly, sure. and say, express my gratitude and say thank you for that, because there is a lot of time and effort that goes into, you know, the CRO and the user interface, and the company that we've been working with essentially from the beginning is a company called Human Marketing, and they handle all of our digital marketing and much of our tech support on the website. They're the ones that are responsible for those user interfaces and the A/B testing and the, you know, the SEO and all of that stuff. And so the founder of that company, you know, he actually had the issue of excessive underarm sweat. So that's how he found our product. He became very passionate about it and originally had wanted to come work with us or work for us. And, you know, unfortunately we couldn't at that time. That was very early on, and where, you know, my business partner and I didn't even know how to install Google Analytics on our website. We weren't even paying ourselves. So there's no way we could afford, you know, a high level digital marketing individual like him. And so then he, you know, we kind of encouraged him and he was thinking about branching off and starting his own company. So he did exactly that. And they found a lot of success. So we've kind of grown our companies together, and you know, obviously we're bound by this passion for, you know, having a safe and a convenient and affordable solution to this problem that plagues, you know, literally tens of millions of people across the world.
Yeah, and you really get a vibe for that, because it's not just like a hit and run website where you buy a t-shirt that might plug a or fix a problem for someone really quick. It's something that's gone really into the weeds. Like there's so many different articles and research done, like, say, for example, the deodorant alternatives and natural deodorants and stuff like that, and soaps. But you know, I'm just scratching the tip of the iceberg here. But
they will, you know, again, thank you for that, Pete. And I'm sure they're going to see this podcast, and I'll relay the message to them, because those folks put a lot of hard work into that. So it's great to hear that.
Yeah, it's paid off. I mean, what was the journey like, though, developing the technology? Because you've got some of the patent technology going on, such as the Hydro Shield. Maybe you can talk about that a little bit.
Right. Yeah. You know, that was the missing ingredient. That was the secret sauce, right? I mean, this was a condition that I started dealing with in junior high. And, you know, of course, I will never forget the day that I first saw this happen. I was wearing this blue t-shirt and you saw the, you know, the sweat mark. It was early in the school day. And I thought, oh my goodness, what is this? And then from that day forward, it was wearing, you know, undershirts, even under t-shirts, right? Now, luckily for me, back then, baggy clothes were in. I mean, I graduated high school in 1996. I'm, you know, 45 years old now. And so back then, very baggy clothes were sort of in style. So layering was in style as well. So that allowed me to conceal this issue for the most part, right? There wasn't this very tight, skinny jeans, skinny fit movement back then. And thank goodness, because it would have been very difficult for me. But through that experience, I knew that if there was somehow that this undershirt could just block the moisture from passing through the outer garment, that we'd have something here. And I grew up in a very small town in Pennsylvania on the East Coast of the United States. And just in my small group of friends, there was 2 to 3 individuals that sort of had the same issue. And so we would be talking about ways, you know, the new antiperspirants that were coming out and ways that we could combat and figure out a solution to this. And so that's when I sort of realized, like, wow, if just in my small group, there's this many fellas that have this issue, then this must, you know, this must expand across the population accordingly. And I knew if we could just come up with this product, that would be great. The challenge, though, however, is, you know, you can't, you know, I had 4 attributes. I wanted it to be, you know, washable, dryable, comfortable and essentially waterproof, right? But you can't just slap a waterproof material against your skin. It'd be like sitting on a, you know, a leather chair or a leather couch without your shirt on. It could actually exacerbate the problem, right? Mm. And so finding that material that wouldn't allow the moisture to pass through was literally half the problem that you could wash and dry. I didn't want any special treatments. I didn't want any chemical treatments. I wanted an undershirt that guys could just treat like they do their normal undershirts, put it on, take it off, wash it, dry it. And there's no change in the process. The only thing is we don't recommend you using bleach on the product, but other than that, it's no different than a regular undershirt. And so in that challenge, finding something that was a moisture barrier that could handle that, and then also too, making it comfortable for the wear. And we achieve that by using a layering system in there and a stitching system that would sort of billow when you move your arms, right? So right now, I mean, I'm obviously probably most likely pitting out. And as I move my arms, I could feel the cool air being sucked in and I can feel that. And that helps mitigate some of that thermal, you know, the heat transfer from your body. Mm. And so something that is, you know, so rudimentary, oh, we're it's just a patch in your underarm. You know, there was a lot of thought that went into how to make this the most effective while also maintaining the wearability, the comfort of it, and then obviously the convenience of it, of you know, just being able to wash it and dry it and treat it like you would a normal undershirt. So that really are all the components that go into our patent. And of course, we have a bunch of knockoffs out there, right? That's inevitable. And a bunch of people who just blatantly copied our stuff. I think it's very safe to say that we are by far the market leader in our space. And so we sort of set the standard, which everyone else seems to be following right now.
And what can you do about that when you see someone else riffing your designs or blatantly lifting them?
It's so aggravating, right? You pour your literally your blood, sweat, and tears into something, and you take all of the risks and you do these things. And what we learned very early on in the process is that the legal process could be very long. It could be very expensive. We have been able to shut down a few folks that popped up. And so, you know, you have to make that decision. Do we want to spend our time, resources, and energy into fighting these legal battles that could get, you know, drawn out over the course of months and even years? Or do we just want to continue to put that time and energy into creating the best product backed by the best service? And I think that's one of the things that differentiates us is we're one of the only ones that have a live, you know, customer service support center. We have the most liberal return policy, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of garments you have to wear, the tags have to be on. Ours is like, you could wear it for 30 days straight. You could wash it. You could dry it. You could do whatever you want. And if at the end of the 30 days, you don't like it, we'll take it back simply because we don't want anyone to have our product that doesn't want it. And sure, test it out. That's how confident we are in the product that you can battle test it. Nobody else offers that. But to answer your question, you know, it's the old adage, pick your battles. Yeah. That's essentially what it is. We do have to pick our battles and be sort of diplomatic in who we want to go after. And you know, if we're ready for that fight, or do we just want to continue pouring our time and energy into our product, our service, you know, our marketing, our advertising, and just continue to dominate from that perspective? And I think the consumer, you know, you put that messaging out there and there's enough of that branding that's been out there. I mean, we've been very fortunate that we've had a lot of sort of free product placement, and you know, there's a couple TV shows that have put our product in there, and that stuff is very expensive, but we didn't have to pay for that. It just fit the storyline. So that means, you know, the branding is working, right? That means that, you know, we've carved out this niche That's to answer, you know, the long answer to your question from that legal standpoint. You know, your patent is only as good as the money essentially you have to defend it. And you know, and the energy that you're willing to put behind it, right? And so right now we still feel like nobody is close enough to us that we would have to, you know, resort to that measure. And we're still finding a lot of success and continuing to just focus on our product and our brand.
I got to ask, what TV shows have you mentioned there?
You know, it was there was a oh my goodness, I can't even believe I forget his name. He's been an actor for a very long time. He was in a lot of stuff, but he's the spokesperson for the Farmers Insurance commercials that are happening out here. And he was in a show that was on one of the more premium channels, and it unfortunately it only lasted like two seasons, but he had mentioned it in the storyline. It was funny because I woke up that morning and I started getting messages like, oh my gosh, I saw you on, you know, your tea got mentioned on the show the other night, like congratulations and this. And I thought, come on, they must be mistaking, right? Because very few of these shows are going to give you that kind of publicity without actually having to pay something. And I thought, oh, that can't be us. And then we finally scrambled that morning and tried to find a clip of what they were talking about. And we did find it. And it was pretty cool for them to mention our brand and work into the storyline. And then the other show, which it was sort of an indirect mention, it was a reality TV show called Jersey Shore.
Oh, I've heard that. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yes, and one of the fellows on there was actually ironing that shirt, and they had mentioned about going out that night to the club, and how, you know, his confidence was higher because he had this, you know, this special undershirt.
Which, oh, that's, you know, so cool.
Yeah, it was very cool. It was very cool. So we, you know, we have that along with a ton of press that, you know, we've gotten throughout the years that quite simply the Me Too products, you know, they can't do. Right.
Yeah.
They don't have the story. Right. They, you know, they're just knockoffs. Right. They don't have that story, that sincerity that went behind their products to the degree that we do.
And also, it must be quite cool when the press is good. I mean, so you wake up in the morning and someone goes, hey, you've been on a TV show. You scramble to it and it's good news. Right.
Yeah.
I keep thinking back to what I just watched Tenet the other night again.
Oh, okay.
Michael Caine goes on about how bad Brooks Brothers is. And then someone's going to have a word with a guy at Brooks Brothers and go, your name was in Tenet. Michael Caine was talking about Brooks Brothers. And they're going to get to it and go, oh yeah, your suit's not going to cut it in this place because it's Brooks Brothers.
Yeah.
But it wasn't even a Brooks Brothers suit. It was made by the costume designer. But yeah, there must be like a flip side where you go, oh great, I'm on TV. What great press, you know? And then you realize, oh, it's someone's having a poke at your company.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So I don't know if the old adage, there's an old saying here that there's no bad press, but I think that was probably pre social media days where, you know, this bad press could be spread at a granular level to, you know, tens of millions of people around the world.
And it's the same as imitation is the best form of flattery. But I think the people that made that up didn't have a pattern that was getting ripped off, right?
So yeah, exactly. Now, you know, mind you, we did get some validation there when we were like, well, hey, you know, if they're knocking us off, then that means we must be doing something right here. But you're right, that's very short-lived and very shallow. It's like, okay, yeah, you know what, I would much rather these people not be there. But in that true competitive spirit, I must say that, you know, they, because they're there, right, we're aware of all of them, we see what they're doing, it does provide some motivation for us, and it does make us want to be better because we know we have these competitors out there and we just want to continuously stay ahead. So I guess if there is a silver lining to that, you know, there it is.
Yep. Billy, I feel like I could talk to you for ages. This is one of my favorite subjects. But I appreciate you've got a day to get on with. It's only just getting going over there for you in Vegas.
Yeah.
What's next for the brand, please?
You know what? After coming through, you know, COVID and going through that whole process, the runway of our foresight got very shortened, right? Because it was like survival mode. We're not looking 3 years from now. We're not looking 2 years from now. We're looking from, you know, every month we're looking at, hey, what are we doing? What's happening? What's coming at us now? We are now coming out of that phase, which is great, right? We had, obviously 2020 was a very challenging year. And then, you know, going into 2021, we thought things were going to get better, and they actually in many ways got worse because of the supply chain issues that many companies are experiencing, and we're no different. And so we were operating at about 60% of our production capacity for all of basically 2021 and for a big chunk of 2022. So up until about maybe 3 months ago is when we finally got caught up with our inventory and we started running our promotions again, because we're a direct-to-consumer company. So when we send out an email promotion, it drives, you know, millions of dollars in revenue for the company. We couldn't do that for the entire year because we had to stretch out our inventory. We had to be able to make that inventory last, right? Your classic supply and demand mm-hmm. economics. And so now that we're finally past that, you know, we're finally past the production issues, and, you know, a big shout out to my business partner who handles that piece of the supply chain, and our VP of operations. The two of them worked very diligently, very hard over the last year and a half and to get us to where we're at now. But there were a couple projects that we were looking at back in 2019 prior to COVID that we had to shelve. You know, we may get into the outerwear. So really it's product development and then distribution, right? We're D2C. So we're looking at always, how do we expand our digital footprints, our D2C distribution channels? Is brick and mortar something that we want to look at? We may entertain that idea as well. Because of the inventory depletion, places like, you know, our international channels that we sell through Amazon, which, by the way, Pete, can I ask you a quick question? Do you use the Amazon in the UK?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Beautiful. Because that has been a strategy that we've utilized with them. It makes it, you know, makes it much easier for us to go ahead and scale up by using the Amazon platforms. And they were driving a very good amount of sales in the UK market. But obviously, when you run out of product and you don't have product to ship internationally, your ability to sort of ask Amazon, hey, we can't just, you can't just send them a trailer load of products. They're going to look at what your sales are. And unfortunately, our sales were hindered by the fact that we had a lack of product, not necessarily demand. So we're slowly building that back up, and we're building all of our international channels back up. We're shipping product out as much as we are allowed to by Amazon, and it's moving, which is great. So to answer your question, we are obviously product development's always on the forefront, and then distribution, right? How do we get this to the people that need it the most?
Awesome. Well, I look forward to seeing you in bricks and mortar, hopefully in the UK. If you need any help with that, pop-up stores or unique little selling spaces, boutiques, give me a call, please, Billy. In the meantime, people can check out thompsontea.com. That's T-H-O-M-P, son, T.com is the website people can go if they're not going to look on Amazon, which they can do as well. We'll put all the links over on the show notes so there's people can find you guys. And you like to hang out on Instagram. Thompson Tees @ThompsonTees.
We have an Instagram page, and a lot of customer generated content sometimes goes on there too, where we'll post, you know, folks will put their pictures up. And, you know, Pete, I think you guys are doing a great thing, driving the men's style and the fashion, and doing these podcasts. I think that's very awesome. I mean, I really do believe that Thompson Tee is a crucial piece of anybody's wardrobe. You know, you should probably have at least one. If you don't necessarily have the condition, there's always going to be a moment, a high pressure situation that, hey, it's fail proof.
Oh, you're telling me about it. I've got some events coming up. This is something I've been crying out for, Billy. So I'll get a badge and then give you some feedback.
But, awesome. Pete, I appreciate that.
In the meantime, great talking to you, Billy, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Hey, likewise. Thank you, Pete.
You've been listening to the Menswear Style podcast. Be sure to head over to menswearstyle.co.uk for more menswear content, and email info@menswearstyle.co.uk if you would like to be a future guest on the show. Finally, please help support the show by leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to this podcast. Until next time.